Okay. All right, great. Welcome back, everybody. We are continuing our advanced Talmud class on the series of Lashon Hara, of improper speech. Last week, we had started a topic. It is one of the major heterim or major leniencies or corollaries to Lashon Hara, and that is known as Apeitz Lasa, which literally means three faces or three people. And the Gemara says that anything that is said in the presence of three people is not Lashon Hara because each of those people has a friend and those friends have friends. That's all the Gemara says. Now, at face value, that is very counterintuitive. I would suspect that the greater the audience of people listening to Lashon Hara, the worse an Avera, the worse a sin it is. And yet the Gemara seems to imply the opposite. So last week we had said the interpretation of the Rashbam, who is Rashi's grandson, as well as the Rambam. And they both said that it's not referring to the initial speaker, but rather it's referring to the audience, those three people. That the first person is not allowed to say something derogatory. That's Lashon Hara. But once that person has sort of released that information into the public domain, which our Gemara defines as three people, then there's no problem for that audience to repeat it to others, simply because inevitably that information will now spread. Those people have friends and those people's friends have friends. So it will inevitably spread. It is considered to be in the public domain. And therefore, there's no problem of saying it over. So that in itself still is a little bit difficult to understand. The classic example that people use to highlight the oddity of this is that if you leave a car in a bad neighborhood unlocked with the keys in the ignition and somebody drives away with it and steals it, you can't just present yourself to the judge and as your line of defense say, well, it was open in a bad neighborhood, so inevitably it was going to get stolen. And so I just sort of facilitated that reality, but I didn't actually do anything. The answer is no, you did. Just because something's left open and somebody may come and do it doesn't mean it has to be you. Parenthetically, that's often what we say why the Egyptians were punished when they enslaved the Jewish people. The classic question is that Hashem had told Avraham that the Jewish people would be slaves in a country and eventually God would take them out. So the question is, why should God punish the Egyptians if they were merely fulfilling God's prophecy? So there are a number of explanations to that question, but one of the answers, which I believe the Ramban gives, is that just because God said somebody inevitably will enslave the Jewish people, it doesn't mean it has to be you. It doesn't mean it had to be the Egyptians. There are other answers, but that sort of dovetails with what we're saying now. So the classical understanding of the Rashbam and the Rambam is that it's not analogous to the case of leaving a car in a bad neighborhood unlocked with a key in the ignition. There, nothing actually has happened. You've just set up a situation that will inevitably happen. However, the Rashbam says that something that is said in the presence of three people, it's not that it will inevitably enter the public domain. It is the public domain. And the definition of Lashon Hara is adding something to the public domain. So if it's already there, then it might not be a nice thing to do, but you're not actually doing what the definition of Lashon Hara is. You're not adding to the public discourse of this idea. The Chiddush, the innovation of the Gemara, is that three people constitutes the public domain. But once you accept that premise, then you're not actually doing anything. It's already there. Yes, Alan. Ah, so that is a very good question. The Chafetz Chaim deals with that. So Alan asked that, okay, granted, you might not have transgressed Lashon Hara, but what about Rechilus? So the classical understanding of Rechilus, or the classic example, is that I go to, let's say a person's name is, let's say a person's name is Reuven. So I go over to Reuven and said, Shimon said something negative about you. So now Reuven hates Shimon. So that is the definition of Rechilus, according to many commentaries. Classically, what that means is that By my speech, I cause enmity or hatred between two different people based on relaying a conversation. So as we'll see later today in the shir, I hope, the Rambam has a very different definition of rechilas. We'll get to that. The Rashbam, however, does say, I don't have it on the source sheet, but the Rashbam does say, does adopt that that definition. And he actually says that that's what our Gemara is talking about. So according to the Rashbam, you wouldn't even transgress rechilas. And again, you have to assume then that according to the Rashbam, rechilas has the same corollary as Lashon Hara. Even though that might not be the easiest assumption to make, I think the difficulty is somewhat attenuated if you figure out where the Isser of Lashon Hara is. The source for Lashon Hara is actually the Pasuk of Rechilas. The Pasuk of Rechilas says, Lo Selech Rechil Bamecha, you should not be a peddler. And most people learn out that Lashon Hara is derived from there. How it is a bit of a question. Hopefully we'll get to that in the Rambam a little bit later today. But if we assume that it is derived from there, then presumably it would be subject to the same corollaries and different definitions. So that's what we did last week. If we would just stop here, okay, it might be a bit of a novel interpretation, but the interpretation would make sense. Saying something in front of three people definitionally has entered that information or conversation into the public domain, and relaying it is not substantively adding to it. However, the Rambam adds a proviso, which is very difficult to square with what he said. So let me share the source sheet. We'll go to page 11. Okay, so in source number 2 on page 11, we have the Rambam. The Rambam says in Hilchos Deos, which is where Lashon Hara is, Hilchos Deos talks about the perfection of character traits and certain character trait related mitzvos that are interpersonal. So the Rambam says in the bolded section, V'imnemru dvarim elu bifnei shlosha. So if these things were said in the presence of three people, kvar nishmar hadavar v'nada, then the matter has already been heard and known. Essentially, it has entered the public domain. The imsiper hadavar echad min hashlosha, and if one of those of three people would sort of relay the information pa macheres another time, ein bo mishum lashon hara. There's no issue of lashon hara. However, the Rambam adds v'hu shelo yiskaven lahavir hakol ulegaloso yoser. However, the person can't have the intention to spread the matter further to publicize it. Now, that seems to be a bit of a catch-22. If you assume that it hasn't entered the public domain yet, then you shouldn't be allowed to say it at all. And if you believe that it has entered the public domain, then why should your intent matter? A, how can you spread it further? And even if you could contend that you could, why should that be an issue? The whole point is that it's already there. It's already in the public domain, so I'm not doing it more. To go back to our car example, nobody says, we don't care about your intention, whether you intended to steal the car or not. You stole the car. So why over here would the Rambam say that intention matters, and then also say that if you intend to add to the discourse, it's a problem if it's already spread? How can you have it both ways? So hopefully for the rest of, for the bulk of the shir, we'll be discussing several ways to understand the Rambam. They're not all mutually exclusive. We'll discuss four approaches to understand the Rambam, and there will be some significant practical differences between these answers. So let me just turn to the next page. You can see a picture. This picture is the result of a study. I believe it was from MIT. It's a map. It's a little bit hard to see that, but it's a map of Twitter communications. I believe this was from one of Obama's presidential elections. I'm not sure if it was his first or second. So MIT wanted to study how information spread, particularly political information. So let's say, for example, the Obama campaign or a news agency released a statement or article about Obama. So they would post it onto Twitter, and then people would see it, people would retweet it, people would share it with other people. And so they wanted to see, how does information spread? So without going into all the details, just because it's not so relevant to our discussion, but the way they modeled how it spread was that they said, okay, how many people saw that tweet that also saw other tweets about Obama? And those people, how often were they in communication about other things with the same people, with the same social network? So what they discovered was that there was sort of a three-tiered system. So in the center, you had what's called the core, which were people that were always in constant communication, or people that were always interested in hearing something about Obama. Then you have the what's called semi-periphery, which were people that were connected to the core group, but less so. And then you have the periphery. And so they tracked how frequently and how long it took to spread, and were the people on the periphery really connected to the people in the more inner circles? And the answer was somewhat, but less so. And so they tried to map how it was. And I think that this is a good model to try to understand how Chazal, how the sages conceptualized the spread of Lashon Hara, and particularly the Rambam. To use a more contemporary analogy, talk about a spread of a virus, talk about an epidemic. So you have patient zero, or you have the epicenter of the discussion, or of the outbreak of the virus, and then it spreads to the nearby regions, to the core, and then you'll have somebody traveling. So let's say the coronavirus started in China. Eventually, it made its way around the world because people were traveling. So you have a local concentrated location, which got it first. And then inevitably it spread to other parts of the world because there was less travel than in the core, but there were links to those other regions. So let's try to take that model and apply it to Lashon Hara, and specifically to this case of Apeitz Lasa, of three people. So if you look on the top of that page, there are four explanations broken up into two categories. So I want to focus on the Rambam's language of intention, uvavad shelo yiskaveh, that you shouldn't intend to spread it. So you can understand the word intent or kavana in two ways. The first way is lav dafka, which is a colloquial term in Gemara language, which means that it's not meant to be taken literally, or that's not the main point. Because when the Rambam says, as long as you don't intend to spread it further, is the Rambam talking about your actual intention or functionally what you're doing? Because there's a difference. You can intend to spread it further, but you're not actually doing anything substantively different. And the flip side is also true. I might not be intending to share it with the entire world, but I'm actually substantively adding to the communication. A classic example, which we'll come back to, is let's say I'm posting something on social media. So I'm posting it with the intent of sharing it with a couple of my friends. I'm intending to share it with a couple of my friends who probably already know the story. But because I posted it online, and in many, many instances, anybody can see it, as long as it's not a private type of communication, then by definition, I have shared it with tons and tons of people. So depending on how you understand the word kavana, that might be a difference. If it's what your actual intent is, then maybe that's not a problem. But if it's really functionally what you're doing, then it might be a problem. So let's go with the interpretation. Let's go with the understanding that kavana is secondary. And what that would then mean is that what the Rambam actually says is that it's forbidden to substantively spread the information. When the Rambam says you're allowed to repeat it, you're allowed to repeat it in a way that you're not actually substantively changing either the qualitative or quantitative scope of the conversation. So I think there's three ways you can see that. The first way is just merely quantitative, expanding the radius of the public domain. So going back to our picture, you have the core group. Now that core group, even though that entire core group hasn't heard it, it's just three people. But let's say you say something in shul. So there's 150 people in a shul or in a minyan. And I say it to three people. Inevitably, it will spread to everybody else in the shul. But Manhattan's a big place. And the people that daven in this shul might have absolutely nothing to do with the people that daven on the Lower East Side. You might. And that's why it really does say that something that enters the public domain really has entered the public domain. But if you view it at a much smaller level, if you view it in terms of concentric circles, like in this model, then if it's staying within that same sphere, that's not a problem. But if you intend to spread it further than the radius that it will naturally reach, that would be problematic. So this was especially relevant in, I guess, pre-extensive communication days, especially before the telephone or email or internet, etc. So if you go back before the telephone, the only method of communication they had were letters. So letters have been around for many thousands of years. I think the Persians were the ones that introduced a mail system for the empire just to optimize communications. But the Chafetz Chaim talks about what happens if you have one village in one country. So let's say Poland. So you have a village in Poland, and then you have another village in Germany somewhere or in France. And the Chafetz Chaim actually even talks about two different cities that are near each other, but that it's not really viewed as one entity. So is it Lashon Hara for me to say something that happened in one town, even though it's public knowledge there, but to say it in a different town or in a different community? And the Chafetz Chaim says yes. The reason why it's problematic is because it might be public knowledge in your community, but it's not public knowledge in another community. Now, if we go back to the Gemara itself says, chavra chavra isle. People have friends. Everybody has friends. Now, friends don't have to be in the exact same community. I can have a friend in a different country, and people had friends in different areas, even before the telephone or even before the internet. But what the Chafetz Chaim is assuming, and I think it's a fair assumption, is that just because you have a friend, if there's no really strong impetus for the information to spread, then not every single bit of information will go from one town to another, even if you know someone there. So if I decide to tell my friend in France what happened where I live in Poland, the Chafetz Chaim says that is Lashon Hara, even though technically it could have made it there. And the reason is because I'm substantively adding to the radius of the public domain. I'm changing the public domain. So perhaps that's what the Rambam means. You're repeating it in an immediate circle, and that immediate circle can be very large, say a shul. So that is not a problem. But me saying it to somebody in a totally different area, even if at some point down the line it may be possible for them to know, that would be problematic. Yes.
No, it's going to spread it outside. Got a problem? That goes against the subject or exception.
Yeah, it's a good question. What happens if either you have somebody in your inner circle as a gossiper, or in a perhaps a more constructive or positive scenario, a reporter? That comes up in Israel a lot. A lot of questions are about news reporters and relaying or posting stories online or publishing stories in a newspaper. If you have a reporter sitting next to you in shul, even if you're off the record, information will by definition spread. So I haven't seen people that address that specific case. What I assume is that if you know for a fact that this person can't keep their mouth shut, then it will spread by definition to whatever that person's normal radius is. Again, you can't assume it'll spread to the entire world, but to that person's normal radius, then yeah, that would be, that wouldn't be Lashon Hara then. So if the person is a news reporter and the guy really doesn't have a good sense of what he can report or what he can't report, what he or she can't do, and whatever you say in shul will ultimately be published in a newspaper, I don't know if we would want that person in shul, but if that's the case, then it wouldn't be a problem to repeat that to the audience of that newspaper. But again, that's just my feeling. I don't know. This does have, though, a lot of ramifications for posting things online or for sharing articles. Because as I said before, once you share something online, unless it's literally private to a specific, to a prescribed group of people, at which point it would be forbidden to share it beyond there. But if somebody just posts something online, it's a weird scenario because literally anybody can access it, or unless you live in like a China or some communist country where they filter the internet, literally anybody can access it. But there's tons and tons of stuff on the internet which I'm not exposed to and which I don't actively look for and which by definition or inevitably won't reach me. So you sort of have this weird scenario where everything is accessible in the public domain, but just because something is accessible, it doesn't mean that I'm going to be exposed to it and it won't actually be part of the public discourse. So at least according to this idea, what I would say is that we care about the result. According to the Rambam and this interpretation of the Rambam, we care about how far this reaches into the public space. So public space doesn't mean how much the public can access, it's how much the public does access. The language of the Rambam is kvar nishmar hadavar, kvar nishmar davar vinoda. It has been heard and known. If I would theoretically hang it up on a piece of paper and nobody would walk past it and see it, even if it's in the town square, it's not known. So just because I post something online, it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody sees it. So if I share something with a couple of friends online, even if other people can access their Twitter feeds or wherever you're posting it or your Facebook page, I can't assume that somebody in China will by definition see it, or somebody in Europe will by definition see it. Or if we live in a city, even someone down the block that's not part of my social circle, rather it depends both on your audience as well as the content. If the content is so to a quote unquote, a viral content, and we know that this will spread way beyond my inner circle, then we can assume that it does have a wide audience. But I don't know if it's just like an anecdote about somebody that was Lashon Hara, but it's not like something that's going to be like on America's worst home, most funniest home videos or something like that, that everyone will see. But if it's just a story, then you can't assume that everybody will know about it just because it's accessible. So that's one interpretation of the Rambam, which leads into the second one. And again, I don't think these are inherently mutually exclusive, but part B is what's called increasing the saliency of the information. So this is especially true when it comes to online stuff, but honestly, even before that. And what I mean is that when you have a story or a news cycle, there are stories that are really that are really gripping, really riveting, and spread virally. And then a week or two later, it disappears from the news cycle. It's gone. I can just give an example from my own personal experience, and maybe other people's are different. What struck me was the Cuomo story about the sexual harassment. So it had this really gripping news cycle at the very beginning. But then once the investigation process started, it subsided for many, many weeks, at least in New Jersey, at least in the New Jersey news feeds that I saw. And then it got reinvigorated much later, weeks or months later, once the findings were released. And now it's back in the public domain. And perhaps in a couple of months, it'll disappear again if no further charges are leveled or there are no further developments in the case. And what you see from that is that there are these news items or things in the public domain that come and go, and they can resurface or they can disappear entirely. And it's not only true for news items, it's true in interpersonal, communal, or honestly just in a family. Some things stick longer than others, some things disappear, and some things will resurface again. So what you could say is that what the Rambam means is that spreading it further can also be a problem if you increase the saliency of the information. If everybody knows about it, and then people just stop talking about it. People forget about it. So, for example, let's talk about the Cuomo story and Trump's impeachment are more recent. But let's say for example, like Bill Clinton, or going back even further to Johnson, who were either impeached or threatened to be impeached because of things that they did. So everybody knows about it in the back of their mind. Like if I would remind somebody, it wouldn't be like, oh, I totally forgot about it. But it's not part of the conversation. So by me repeating it, I'm giving new life to that conversation. And on a much smaller scale and with much less public information, there are an infinite number of conversations or facts or stories that people won't completely forget, but they're just not going to be thinking about it unless you mention it or repost something on the internet or reshare something with somebody on the internet. So that could potentially be another manifestation of spreading the story further, not quantitatively, but qualitatively. I'm reinvigorating it and giving it new sticking potential in the human mind. So that is an issue. So just to show you an article where this comes up, if you turn to the last page in the booklet, not the last page, the second to last page, source number 7. So this is an article in a journal called Tzohar, not connected to the rabbi organization Tzohar in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not sure what organization it is part of, but the journal is called Tzohar. The title of the article is Lashon Hara in a Democratic Communal Framework. It was written by Rav Azriel Ariel, who's a Rosh Yeshiva in a Hesder Yeshiva somewhere in Eretz Yisrael. He is the father of the Rav Yaakov Ariel, the chief rabbi of Petach Tikva, who was at one point considered to be a candidate for the chief rabbi of Israel, a massive Talmud Chacham and one of the leading poskim in the Dati Lumi religious Zionist world. So his son, who is also a Talmud Chacham in his own right, published an article that kind of delineated the parameters for Lashon Hara in a public domain. He focused on newspapers and political campaigns. And so he talks about how if there was a media discussion about something and it subsided, and then some reporter or a blogger decides to reinvigorating it by raising the issue again, that could potentially be an issue of Lashon Hara. Let me try to see if there's like a specific. He just basically says this idea that reinvigorating a story is potentially a problem, and that's what the Rambam's talking about. So now we have a question, which is, well, okay, if quantitatively adding this to the sticking power of a story or reinvigorating it is an issue, then what's the cutoff point? How do you measure it? So he brings an interesting idea, which in my humble opinion, I disagree with, but he brings a conversation that he had with Rav Dov Lior, who until recently was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva in Kiryat Arba in Hebron. He retired, but he's again one of the leading poskim in the Dati Le'umi world in Eretz Yisrael. And he said that he believes that the time period is 12 months. And he brings two proofs. The two proofs are from different Gemaras. The first one is when it comes to the bracha of seeing somebody for the first time in 12 months. So the Gemara in Bracha says that if you haven't seen someone in 3 days, you should say Shalom Aleichem. But if you haven't seen somebody in 12 months, you should say the bracha Baruch Mechaye Mesim. Blessed are you, Hashem, who revives the dead. Now, you don't think this person was dead, but what that means is that they had been lost from your public, from your consciousness. That if you hadn't seen them in a year, then in your mind, they don't exist anymore. There's a lack of object permanence, if you will. Even though, again, if somebody would ask you about the person, you're like, oh, yeah, of course I know him. And I haven't heard that anything happened to him. So I assume that the person is still alive. Nevertheless, because you just don't know and you're not thinking about the person, the Gemara says that you should make a bracha, Baruch Mechaye Mesim. And the amount of time that they give is 12 months, is a year, because after 12 months, a person begins to forget. The same thing is true for the bracha of Shehechiyanu. So if you if you try a new fruit and you make a Shehechiyanu on it, the amount of time that you have to wait before you can make that bracha is 12 months for the same reason. That after 12 months, you forget the experience a little bit. Even though, again, you know what happened, intellectually you know what happened, but on a visceral level, it's become somewhat diluted. And so after 12 months, you re-experience it again. A second example is by Hashavas Aveda. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, which talks about the laws of finding a lost object, at one point in the discussion, it says that after 12 months, you can assume that the person has lost hope. Again, that's provided that the person had access to hear about the lost object and to come and claim it. But assuming that the person had the opportunity to learn about you finding the object and also had the opportunity to claim it, after 12 months, we can assume that the person has given up, because after 12 months, a person forgets things. And again, not intellectually, but on a visceral level, the person has just forgotten about it. So Rav Dov Liar says that we see from those two examples, and I would honestly add a third, which is mourning or avelos, the maximum amount of time that a person is allowed to keep the halachos, keep the customs of mourning a person, is 12 months. That's why for a parent, the mourning time is 12 months. And after that, you might feel sad and you know that the person is no longer with you, but on a visceral level, the pain has begun to be a little bit lessened, because one of the gifts, the Gemara says, that Hashem gave to humanity is the ability to forget. It doesn't mean that the information is gone. It just means that it's a little bit removed from your everyday life and emotional experience. I think it was Nietzsche. If you look on the bottom, he says that blessed are the forgetful, for they get the better even of their blunders. And perhaps then, Rav Dov Liar says, you could say that the amount of time that it takes for a new cycle to subside is 12 months. And so before that, it wouldn't be Lashon Hara, and afterwards, it would be. In my humble opinion, I think that it's relative, and it depends on a number of factors. It depends on what the information is. It depends how you're spreading it. It depends how far it's spread. It depends on the type of community and what the community is focusing on. In my opinion, it's relative, but regardless of what the cutoff point is, that could be a method of interpretation of the Rambam. And that is that if I'm substantively, qualitatively changing the saliency of the story, that means I'm spreading it further. I'm spreading it further in time. So that could also be another explanation of the Rambam. There's a third explanation, and this is a little bit more subtle, and I don't know if this is exactly what the Rambam means. The third is that the public domain is a dynamic area. What I mean by that is, let's go back to our picture, right? So this is a map of how far the information can spread. It starts off in the core, and ultimately it will spread to the periphery. But it doesn't spread there instantaneously. There's a certain rate of transmission. In fact, a lot of what epidemiologists do, those who study diseases, is that they try to come up with equations to map how a disease spreads. Or another thing that I once did research for a physics professor, where I researched how to optimize a power grid design. It looked like this. There are a lot of different nodes or parts of a power grid, and they're connected by wires. So when something affects one part of a power grid, it will ultimately affect everything, but it's just a function of how long it will take for it to be an issue somewhere down the line. And it follows a certain rate. So what it could mean is that, according to the Rambam, when I say something in front of three people, it hasn't really, let's be honest, it hasn't entered the public domain yet. It's spoken to three people. Three people know about it, or four, including myself. But not everybody else knows yet. It's just that the Gemara and the Rabbanim knew human nature and says inevitably it will spread, but it hasn't yet. Rather, what has happened is that there you have now set up in place a process of a certain rate of transmission. So, I don't know, on the first day, 6 people might know, then 12 people might know, then 44 people, et cetera, et cetera. It'll keep on spreading exponentially. But there's a certain rate given just the dynamics of the community and culture that a person lives in. So if I do anything in that normal framework of communication, then I'm not changing that equation. I'm not changing that rate of transmission. But if I go above and beyond, if I have kavana to be megala it more, if I have intention to reveal it more, which means if I have an intention to augment that rate of transmission by doing something unusual, that is a problem. Even if the person that someone says it to will ultimately know about it in 3 days from now, if I speed up the process by doing something unusual or abnormally proactive, that is spreading it further, not because I'm expanding the audience, but because I'm expanding the rate of transmission to something that's not normal. And that would have a lot of ramifications. Because again, what's considered normal communication? Nowadays, normal communication is not only speaking. People text things, people email things, people post things online, people publish things in newspapers. Things spread at a much faster rate. And so according to this, once 3 people know, unless they have kosher phones and don't use the internet, and don't talk to people that use the internet, it would be very hard to say that you could really change something in a very substantive way. The only way you could do that is, well, maybe it would depend on the conversation. Like if I say something that is technically, if somebody says something that is negative to me, I hear something negative. So it's Lashon Hara, but it's not a very juicy story. And maybe I'll remember it. Maybe I'll forget about it. Maybe it'll spread to a couple more people. And then inevitably down the line, it'll spread throughout the entire community. But it's not a very salient story. And so in order to reach the entire community, it might take, I don't know, a year, about 12 months worth of Shabbos guests for the story to actually get around. But if I say, you know what, look, I know this is not a really riveting story. I'm going to publish it online. And now everybody will know about it the next day. That would be a problem. But if it's just a link that somebody shared with you and I reshare it with somebody or post it on my Facebook page, that's not substantively altering anything. Because even though I'm technically speeding up the process, somebody was going to post it online or somebody was going to share the link. So I'm not actually substantively increasing the rate of transmission at all, because I'm not changing the equation. So the Rambam doesn't say that explicitly, but I think that is another way of understanding the Rambam, that it doesn't mean that you're increasing the saliency of the story. It doesn't mean that I'm increasing the audience size, but rather it means I'm increasing the rate of transmission. The faster I spread the story above and beyond what is normally done, that is problematic. And so if we would say that about, like, let's say a reporter. So if I'm in a newsroom or if I'm researching a story, I know I'm not the only one, unless it's like some really hot tip. And then honestly, even then, the person that's telling me the tip can just tell another reporter. So if I get this hot tip that I want to share with everybody, that's not altering the rate of communication because someone else is going to share it too in a few minutes. So even for a journalist, that wouldn't be Lashon Hara as long as it's been said in front of 3 people. But if those 3 people are private people, and I'm a reporter, and so without me, it wouldn't get very far, very quickly at least. It would take a year to get as far as I could get in a day just by publishing it in a newspaper. Then that would be a problem. So it really depends on the circumstances. So that, I would say, are the sort of 3 explanations of the Rambam where the intention is somewhat secondary. And rather what the Rambam means that it is forbidden to substantively spread the information. Maybe it's quantitatively, maybe it's qualitatively, or maybe it's time-wise. However, there is very strong evidence to advance a fourth and final understanding of the Rambam, which at first glance may seem a little odd, but it explains a lot of issues with the Rambam, and that is that intention really does matter. I could say the exact same thing to the exact same person under the exact same circumstances, and depending on my intention, it will be either mutter or usser. It will either be permitted or prohibited. And the reason is because according to the Rambam, Lashon Hara is not only an issue about the damage that it causes, but rather it's a midos issue. It is a character flaw issue that impacts the speaker. And this idea will actually clear up a lot of interesting things about the Rambam. And that is that according to the Rambam, there's no explicit prohibition in the Torah about saying Lashon Hara. And according to the Rambam, in Hilchos Deos, there is no prohibition of listening to Lashon Hara, even though we know that there is. It's very weird, but let's take a look at the Rambam and we'll uncover some very interesting ideas which will help shed light on this. So if you turn the page, this is from Chabad.org, and Chabad.org has a translation of the entire Rambam into Hebrew and English. So I want to read to you excerpts from the first three halachos of Lashon Hara that the Rambam has. So if you turn the page, you can see Deot, chapter 7. So we'll start in halacha aleph, halacha 1. The Rambam says, Hamaragel b'chaveiro, somebody that collects gossip, over below sase, transgresses a prohibition, sheneemar lo selech rachil ba'amecha. Don't be a peddler of information. Okay, that's how the Rambam starts off. Now let's go to Halacha Beis, where the Rambam defines what Rechilos and what Lashon Hara is. So in Halacha Beis, in the second Halacha, he says, Ezehu Rechil, what is a gossiper? Ze she to'en dvarim v'holech mize laze. One moment, sorry. I'll hear the alarm. Is there a way to turn it off? Mm-hmm. Sorry, we'll be back in a moment. Okay, we're back. Apparently they were testing the alarm. And as you now all heard, it works. Oh. Guess we're not done testing. Thank you. So apparently they're testing alarms all day. We'll try one more time. If it starts going back on again, then I think we'll have to stop for this week. Next week, I do hope to be giving the shiur again, same time. I do have a conference, so the shiur will only be over Zoom. I'm not able to be here, but God willing, I do hope to give it next Wednesday at 10:30. So let's just quickly go back again. So the Rambam says that what is rechilus? Somebody who goes and transfers information from one person to another. Ve'omer, and he says, kach amar ploni, kach v'kach shamati al ploni. This guy said this, that I heard something about this guy. The person peddles information. So afal pishahu emes, even though what he's saying or relaying is true, it destroys the fabric of society. That's rechilus. So one thing to point out in the Rambam is that rechilus is the transfer of information. The Rambam never says that it causes enmity. The Rambam does not say that I tell Reuven, Shimon said something about you, and that causes Reuven to hate Shimon. What the Rambam says is that I just tell people what I heard about other people. It's gossip in the very classic sense of it. It's like a tabloid. I'm a walking human tabloid that I just collect information about people and I say it without any regard for the destruction that it causes. But it doesn't say that it causes hate between different people. I can do damage in other ways. According to the Rambam, rechilus is merely, in what yeshivish circles people say, is just hacking about people, just talking about people. I think there's a quote that great minds think, talk about ideas, and lesser minds talk about people. And that's really what the Rambam is saying here. That according to the Rambam, what the Torah is prohibiting here is gossip in the very classical sense of it. Then the Rambam says, Yesh avon gadol mizeh. There's an even greater sin, ad me'od. V'hu b'chlal lav zeh. And it's part of this prohibition, v'hu lashon hara. And that is lashon hara. V'hu... Oh. All right. Okay, so I'm just going to finish this idea and then we'll have to stop. I apologize. So the Rambam says that lashon hara is saying something negative. Lashon hara is saying something negative about somebody else and causing damage with that speech. And that is a subset of gossip. So according to the Rambam, the prohibition of lashon hara is not actually saying something bad about somebody. The prohibition of saying something bad about somebody is because it's a really bad subcategory of general gossip. Now, general gossip doesn't necessarily cause damage to somebody else. It is a character flaw. And so the root issue of lashon hara is not necessarily the damage that you do to the person. That is certainly something that's there, but there are other prohibitions for that. There's something called verbal abuse. There's something called hurts, either financially or physically or emotionally damaging somebody. But that's not lashon hara, and that's certainly not rechilus. According to the Rambam, the issue of lashon hara, at least in Hilchos Deos, that he describes over here, is the character flaw issue. And that really does depend on my intention. So I do hope to elaborate on this further next week when hopefully they won't be testing the alarms. But according to the Rambam, there are two issues. One is the hurt that I caused the other person. So if I hurt the other person, that's prohibited under Lashon Hara. But even if I don't hurt the other person, if it creates this character flaw of gossip, of spreading derogatory speech, even if it's said and become public knowledge where everybody knows about it and it's not actually hurting somebody, if I have intent to spread it further, then that's a problem, not because of the damage that it causes, because it doesn't cause damage, but rather it's because of the character flaw that I evince, that I strengthen inside of me, and in society at large by what I'm doing. It's a midos prohibition and less of a damage prohibition once it's said in the presence of three people. So that would be a major issue. All right. I do apologize, and God willing, we will continue next week. Have a wonderful, wonderful week.